WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. The silent film era has been celebrated for its innocence, but my guest Kevin Brownlow says the silent era recorded another America: gangsters, corrupt politicians, syphilis, discrimination, and unemployment. Brownlow's latest book, Behind the Mask of Innocence, is an attempt to set the record straight by examining films of social conscience in the silent era. For the most part, these are films that had been virtually forgotten until Brownlow rediscovered them. Brownlow is one of the world's leading silent film historians. He also collects and restores silent films. He restored Abel Gance's 1927 silent epic, Napoleon. MGM, the original American distributor, hacked down the film from 6 hours to 80 minutes. Napoleon went pretty much unnoticed until, after years of detective work tracking down missing footage, Brownlow presented his restoration in 1980. He also produced a trilogy of films on Charlie Chaplin, Buster Keaton, and Harold Lloyd, which you may have seen on public television. I asked him why he loved silent films.
I think it's because I was a kid at school, and they used to show us films every third weekend, and they couldn't afford talking pictures, and so they showed us silence. And although I wasn't then so impressed by the films themselves, what fascinated me was the fact that you could have a cinema in your own home, you could have a movie theatre in your own home. And so I badgered my parents to get me a projector, and I got one for my 11th birthday. And only two films came with it, and they both only lasted 2 minutes. So I started hunting for more, and I found a whole pile of silent films in a shop off Baker Street, and brought them back and ran them to my parents. And my mother recognized Douglas Fairbanks and William S. Hart and Bessie Love, all the stars that she'd grown up with. So I thought, this must be worth something. So I went to the library, took out a book on the history of the cinema, and it fell open at a picture of the Douglas Fairbanks film I had. And so that persuaded me that there must be some value in these films. And gradually, I found more and more of them and discovered that they were extremely well made and extremely well photographed, and actually more interesting as films than some of the stuff I was looking at in the local cinema.
It's so remarkable to me that you could have found footage, in junk stores and, you know, local fairs and things like that.
These were prepared for home movie use. They were abridged versions of complete features. And there were some very rare things on them. And, two of the reels I found were from a film called Napoleon. But the American films impressed me tremendously, both for their vitality and their technical perfection at a very early date. And so I started researching. As a matter of fact, I was supposed to do sport at school every afternoon. Instead of that, I went to the British Film Institute and began looking them up in old magazines. And that was a thrilling detective work, because they had actually changed the titles for home movie use. So you had to find out what they were by a process of trial and error and just ploughing through all the releases till you found the description that matched.
Well, a little later, I want to get back to some of the detective work you've done in your collecting of movies, and we'll talk also about how you pieced together the epic Napoleon. But now I want to talk a little bit about your new book, Behind the Mask of Innocence. In your new book, you write that silent films are usually seen as representing an era of innocence, but they didn't really.
That's right. As you asked me what turned me on to silent films in the first place, when I became a filmmaker, I felt that they had been slandered, that people regarded them as jerky, flickering, technically inept curiosities, and I wanted to change that picture. And then as I researched them, I found that the prevailing mood was one of sentimental nonsense, hokum, as the Americans called it, melodrama, and that however well-made the film was, people tended to dismiss the story as being ridiculous and antique and quaint. And I felt that there must have been films made about social issues of the time. There must have been films about the immigrants, and there must have been films about women's suffrage and things like that. I must say it took a long time to find any evidence of them. But once I did, it turned into an avalanche, and I was absolutely staggered that so many films were made that we know so little about, and alas, most of them have been destroyed.
My guest is Kevin Brownlow, who's really one of the world's leading authorities on silent films, and his new book is called Behind the Mask of Innocence: Sex, Violence, Prejudice, Crime, Films of Social Conscience in the Silent Era. You know, the early silent movies raise a lot of interesting questions when you're talking about social films, because some of those films have to do with violence or sexuality. And this is the first time that people started asking questions about the degree of explicit sexuality or explicit crime that was going to be shown on the screen and what effect that would have on the people who saw it. What were some of the early ways those questions were raised, and what were some of the early fears that were expressed?
Well, right from the very start, when pictures first began to move, people started using them as an excuse. And the great train robbery of 1903, you can't get much earlier as far as story films go than that, already a young offender said, I was influenced by that picture to do this terrible crime. If I hadn't seen that film, I wouldn't have done it. and so the churchmen and the women's clubs, they started getting rather anxious about these pictures. And in 1906, I think it was, Harry Thor shot the famous architect Stanford White when he discovered that his wife had been his mistress and before they were married. And this scandal made many people turned into a film. One of them, I think, came out 2 days after the event. And this series of films were the first to show the working class and immigrant audiences how the upper crust lived. And these were the people who made their laws and controlled their lives. And the middle classes were shocked that such things could be viewed by ordinary working people. And so it made them, the Thor films made them shut theatres down.
So the earlier censorship that you're talking about is really what precedes the Hays Office and the Hollywood Production Code.
Yes, Hays didn't come in till 1921, 1922. And he was brought in because there was a series of scandals in Hollywood which threatened the family audience. The studio heads realized that unless they did something, they would lose that vital audience. And they did what the baseball people did when the World Series was fixed. They brought in a neutral figure who became known as the Tsar of all the Russias. And he really did a lot of harm because he emasculated stories which would otherwise have been getting stronger all the time, getting more interesting, more political and more engaged, and he made them blander. So that the great period of social films, where virtually every subject under the sun was tackled, was before his arrival up to 1921.
Let's take a short break, and then we'll talk more about silent movies. And my guest is Kevin Brownlow, and he's really one of the world's experts on silent films, and he has a new book on the subject called Behind the Mask of Innocence: Sex, Violence, Prejudice, Crime, Films of Social Conscience in the Silent Era. You might also know Kevin Brownlow as one of the people who restored the 1927 silent film classic Napoleon. More after the short break. This is Fresh Air. Kevin Brownlow is my guest. He's an expert on silent films. He restored the 1927 film, silent film classic Napoleon, and he's the author of a new book about social films of the silent film era called Behind the Mask of Innocence. I think all of the silent films were made on nitrate film, which has a fairly short shelf life. Can you explain what the problem is with nitrate film, the problems with storage, and the problems with durability?
Yes, nitrate is known to be very inflammable, and as a result, people have created a scare. To such an extent, studios and private collectors have thrown it out. They won't have it anywhere near them in case it explodes like a hand grenade. But in fact, it's been an awful lot of nonsense being talked about it, because you drive around in a car with petrol in your tank, you don't set light to that, and it's no more dangerous than that. However, it can decompose because it's got animal fat in its makeup. And this is the most distressing aspect of it. It was expected to last 50 years, and the silent era itself was history 60 years ago. So we're talking about film which has miraculously lasted, and there's not a, you know, about two-thirds of the silent era is already lost. So we're talking about the remaining third. Some of that has already been copied by archives onto safety stock. Now, the rest of it must be done because this is the last decade of nitrate. And if we don't do it, posterity will regard it as one of the greatest cultural crimes.
Well, I think one of the things you're proving is that we really don't fully know what the silent film era was like, since so much of the movies have been lost.
Particularly those years before the 20s started. We have, during that period, there was something called the three-reeler that was very popular. And the three-reeler, because it was an awkward length, was never kept. And hardly any of them survive. And yet the most interesting subjects were made in that peculiar length. It lasted, you know, about half an hour, 40 minutes, depending the speed you ran it at. And some remarkable pictures were produced, and some series about capital versus labor and about the early gangsters and the patent medicine racket. And it's absolutely fascinating.
You know, speaking to you is really getting me enthusiastic about going to the video store and renting some silent films, and more of them are coming out on video. I'll be honest with you, I've never rented a silent film on video. It always seems like it will be an incomplete experience watching it on a small screen without music, or at least without live music. I wonder if you've had the experience of watching silence on video and what you think of it.
Well, I think watching films on video is an incomplete experience. I think a whole generation has lost the thrill of seeing a picture in the cinema as it was meant to be seen, with an audience reacting strongly to it and adding that reaction to their own. And then they look at the same film. If you look at the same film on video, it's never anything like the same. However, there are some excellent examples on video. In fact, my partner and I, my partner David Gill and I, have prepared some, including Ben-Hur, the 1925 Raymond Navarro version, and Carl Davis has written a fantastic score for it, the Garbo film Flesh and the Devil, quite a number of them, King Vidor's The Crowd, and King Vidor's Show People, which is one of the funniest pictures of that period. So there are some fine pictures available on video, but they should be done with the best possible quality and also the best quality score. And that sometimes lets it down. Sometimes you get a silent film which is ghastly quality in every sense. The music, too, is just a piano. But that brings me back to the thing that got me going in the first place, that it was the technical perfection of these films which amazed me, that photographically they were always extremely good. And it's the copying over the years that has made them look, he's given them that murky look. And alas, videotape is not the ideal medium for them. You should really see a really good print projected with a cart with an arc, or with a really good light behind it on a big screen, and preferably live music.
You restored the 1927 French silent film Napoleon, which was directed by Abel Gance. I'm sure a lot of detective work went into finding the film. I think you'd said that you saw the first part of it when you were around 11 years old, but that was just just a couple of minutes that you saw, right?
No, it was a couple of reels, which would have lasted 20, 25 minutes, and it was enough to convince me that this was some of the finest filmmaking I'd ever seen. I go out on a limb and say it was the finest filmmaking I'd ever seen. And if the rest of the film is as good as that, then I must get the rest of it. Well, it took years and years and years, but it was one of the most extraordinary things. The more I found, the better the picture got, until the version that we're running in Europe now is 5 hours 13.
Well, that's longer than the version that was in the States a few years ago, isn't it?
Considerably longer, yes. Yes, it is. And we're constantly finding more.
Where are you finding more and more footage from this?
Well, now footage is being dredged up from the archives of the Cinémathèque Française, and is not a great deal, but there's another 5 minutes to be sneaked in somehow, if we can afford to do it. But every time you put more footage in, you have to pay to change the score. And if I could tell you that it costs £2,000 just to Xerox the score, you can see how expensive it is.
At this point, is your version of Napoleon longer than what Abel Gance originally had in mind?
No, it isn't. Gans was forced to show a shorter version at the premiere, and it was about 3.5 hours. It sort of approximated to the version that's shown in America. After that, he showed an expanded version, and that, as far as we can gather, was more than 7 hours. So still quite a lot of it lost, and I don't think it'll ever be found at this late date. People think it's going to be an effort to sit through it, but it isn't. It sweeps you along with it, because the more you put back, the more explanation is given, the more innovation you see, and the more exciting it becomes.
What are you working on now?
David Gill and I are now working on a documentary for American Masters on D.W. Griffith.
That should be very interesting. What are you focusing on?
Well, the whole career. It's going to be 3 programs. And so we're desperately trying to find people who worked with him and who knew him. So if anyone is listening to this who worked with Griffith and we haven't interviewed you, please let us know.
Okay. Given Brownlow, thank you very much for talking with us.
Thank you very much indeed.
Silent film historian Kevin Brownlow. His latest book is Behind the Mask of Innocence. This is Fresh Air.